What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Moderna and Johnson & Johnson booster shots could be available today after the CDC recommends their use. Plus, tech stocks tumbled overnight after Snap blamed Apple's new ad policy for its shrinking growth. And Democratic voters tell their officials in Washington, get that big bill passed now.
No matter where we went and no matter how Democratic voters identified, they liked it.
It's Friday, October 22nd. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky has recommended booster shots for the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccines. Shots could be available as early as today. They were authorized by the FDA earlier this week. Walensky has also backed mixing vaccines, allowing people to receive a different brand shot than their first. President Biden has said he'd consider deploying the National Guard to help ease supply chain bottlenecks. The president did not say when he'd do so. The White House had previously said that governors have the ability to deploy the Guard in their states and that there was no effort at the federal level. Meanwhile, backlogs continue at the nation's ports. Wait times at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach are now 3 weeks. China Evergrande has made an overdue interest payment to international bondholders, Chinese state media reports. The $83.5 million payment saves the real estate giant from what could have been Asia's largest ever corporate default. But it's still on the hook for a separate late payment worth $45 million. The grace period on that bill ends next week. And actor Alec Baldwin has shot two people with a prop gun while filming the movie Rust in New Mexico. That's according to the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office. Cinematographer Helena Hutchins was killed, and director Joel Souza is in the hospital. A representative for Baldwin could not be reached for comment. You can read more about the story at WSJ.com. Yesterday was a good day for U.S. stock markets, with the S&P 500 ending at a record high. Today, though, today does not look so good for tech stocks. The big ones, Apple, Facebook, Alphabet, they fell in after-hours trading on news that social media company Snap expects growth to slow. Markets reporter David Hodari is with us to explain what's going on. Hey, David.
Hey, Peter.
Thanks for being here. David, what exactly did Snap say about its growth projections?
Snap said that it expects its growth to slow in 2021's final quarter because of recent changes Apple has made to its App Store privacy rules, and those moves highlight the impact of the iPhone maker's new policy on digital advertising.
Remind us what that new policy on digital advertising actually is.
So in April, Apple brought in a new policy that requires apps to ask users whether they want to be tracked, and that's made it harder for advertisers to target their ads at the right audience and to track how well those ads have been performing.
And did the other tech stocks drop after hours because investors assume that Apple policy will affect their growth too?
It certainly looks that way. Ad revenues represent significant parts of all of Facebook's, Twitter's, and Alphabet's businesses, and all of those stocks dropped in after hours trading.
This comes after a bumper week of tech earnings. What do Snap's results tell us about the state of the overall tech sector?
Well, if you listen to some analysts, the outlook is not as bright as it has been. Some observers of the tech space say investors have been underestimating the impact of Apple's rule change on digital advertisers. And they say that Apple's rule change has exposed something of an Achilles heel for big social media companies.
David Hodari is a markets reporter. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Peter.
Coming up, as Democrats in Washington work to salvage their policy bills, Democratic voters across the country say they are all on board.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
President Biden says Democrats are moving closer to an agreement on their big social policy bill.
How we get there, we're down to four or five issues, which I'm not going to negotiate on national television.
That was him last night at a CNN town hall. Democrats continue to pare the bill back to get all 50 of their senators on board. It's a sign not everything in it is popular with elected Democrats. But what do the party's voters think? One of the Journal's politics reporters, Eliza Collins, has spent time interviewing the Democratic Party faithful, and she joins us now from Phoenix. Hey, Eliza.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We are now 9 months into the Biden administration. Democrats control both chambers of Congress. Did they expect to find themselves at the position that they're in right now?
Well, I think this is the position they campaigned on and that they united on, was that if they got control of Congress, they would pass a big, ambitious agenda. I think no one expected that it would be just quite as ambitious as it is, but COVID hit and Democrats united around spending more money, a larger federal role. Those were things that Democrats were not always united around, but even centrists overall decided that the government should spend more money, that the government should have a larger role in healthcare and childcare and climate change. And so now they're talking about passing a potentially multi-trillion dollar package that touches on all of those things after they just passed in the Senate a $1 trillion infrastructure package and earlier in the year passed a $2 trillion coronavirus relief package. So that's a lot of money and a lot of government services going out in just 10 months.
We should caution that at this moment, we don't know what's going to emerge in this final social spending bill. You and some other reporters fanned out across the country to talk to Democratic voters about what they like about it. What'd you learn?
Yeah, so this bill right now, exactly, it's just a pitch. Basically, they said they have $3.5 trillion to spend, and they said they had a whole bunch of programs they wanted to put in it. Then some centrists said that they were not comfortable with $3.5 trillion, and more recently, they're not comfortable with how to fund it, which was taxing the wealthy and corporations. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, one of the centrists, said that makes her uncomfortable. So they've got to figure out a lot right now. So it doesn't look like it's going to be $3.5 trillion. We're not sure how it's going to be paid for, but the overall idea of the government spending more to subsidize childcare, preschool, climate change, Medicare benefits, Democratic voters really, really like that. So I talked to some people who were moderates, former Republicans, and they said this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, basically spend the money. And that's shifted. I mean, I covered the Bernie Sanders campaign in 2020. That's how Sanders voters were talking about. That's not how Joe Biden voters were talking. So it's really interesting to hear that basically across the ideological spectrum for the Democratic Party, at least.
What does that tell you about the relationship between elected Democrats in Washington and their voters?
So overall, I think they're pretty in line. Most Democrats are lined up behind this. You know, this package could have passed with $3.5 trillion and stocked full of all these priorities, except for two Democratic centrist senators, Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin. And then there were a handful of centrist House members who were uncomfortable but didn't draw quite as hard of lines. So 95%+ of the Democratic Party is basically where those voters are. The problem is the centrists are the ones who win the seats for them. So it's easy for the progressives to make all of these promises when they keep winning in blue states or blue House districts. It's the red and purple seats that Democrats need to hold on to their majorities.
We hear a lot that Democrats need to pass this to salvage the Biden presidency. That's probably hyperbolic, but did you get a sense of urgency from the voters you talked to that they wanted to see this passed and they wanted to see it passed now?
Yes, absolutely. Those voters feel like if they do not pass it, they will lose. So they have the 22 midterms where Democrats really have an uphill battle. When a president is in office, generally the party in power loses the next cycle. So they've got that going against them. They've got redistricting. A lot of their seats just got harder. And they've got a really narrow majority. So it doesn't take a lot of seats to lose the majority. The Senate is 50-50, so it really could go either way. There are competitive seats on both sides. But Democratic voters feel like if they don't pass those things, they'll lose in 22, and they feel like they'll lose in 2024 when Biden's up again. So there is an absolute sense of urgency from those voters.
This looks like a pretty big shift to the left in a pretty short amount of time.
These are ideas that Bernie Sanders ran on in 2016 and were really, quite frankly, dismissed by Clinton world and those voters, and now they're quite popular. So they're not all the way to the left, but they've moved. The entire party has moved. And what's really interesting is when you talk to voters who say, you know, definitely we need a bigger government role, that just shows basically that the center of the party has shifted. I mean, Democrats very much realize that they have fragile majorities right now, and the idea that they don't come along very often and they might be willing to take bigger steps than they're initially comfortable with because they know that this might be their only chance in, you know, decades. These all three majorities, the White House, the Senate, and the House, don't come along very often.
Liza Collins is a political reporter. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And finally, Friday Bingo's back. Players have been eager for the return of in-person bingo since the pandemic began, perhaps a little too eager. As churches and community groups reopen their doors, rising tensions among players has forced some to introduce rather drastic measures to keep the peace. Reporter Kevin Armstrong visited a number of bingo halls and has the story.
Literally, the organizer has had to chide them, essentially call them childish for both line cutting and name calling. And some churches have dedicated hotlines now for the bingo players to call just to know what time and date the games are, kind of left to these good Samaritans and security guards to really just regulate all the bingo players at the door. And again, it's largely senior citizens. There are younger people, but grandma and grandpa can get pretty rambunctious when you're talking about their bingo cards and their big night out and everything.
And that is What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.